look at things like Confucius and some of those Eastern philosophers and stuff like that. Look at so much that has been passed down into their world to talk about, and then so much of the history we have is because
Hey, we're here. Welcome to another episode of the Joe and Doug Show. How is Joe this Thursday?
Amazing. Now, let me tell you, I don't want to freak out or anything, okay? But I'm not wearing anything with, like, lettering on it right now, and I want to move my camera over to that side. So I flipped the image on the screen so it's actually a mirrored version so I could see what it looks like. Nobody, if I can tell you, you wouldn't even know.
No,
but
yeah.
I just want to let you know that if you saw me, I was at a weird angle, you'd think, what's going on here? So just want to start.
Interesting.
There you go.
I saw on your Facebook,
yes,
you have gotten some invites to do motivational speaking.
Yeah.
That's something
you've
been talking about for 3 years. I mean,
For sure.
For a while. What is it? Where are you going? What are you doing? Have you accepted?
Haven't accepted. Still negotiating the price because it's a paid gig. So go back and forth and, you know, whatever.
Businesses for you to go into?
So one's a group of kids, like at-risk youth and whatever. So that should be an amazing one. That's one of my favorites because you have a chance to actually change somebody's, you know, future.
Adults are just screwed.
Yeah. Or just decimate them and send them on the improper path. But yeah, it'll be fun. I can't wait. I've been looking forward to this my whole life.
That's so cool. Do you know what you're going to say when you finally get the negotiation stuff down?
No, come on. You know me. Bullet point. Be inspirational. See ya.
They don't have a topic or a genre or is
one of them for school. So I got to think like they have something in mind that they want to do. They want to impress something upon them. And the other one is a group of adults that are, you know, investors, business people. Mm. So it's more of a, you know, probably the family, strong life, strong work ethic kind of thing. So
nice.
And I gave them like a bunch of samples of the stuff that we do even through these shows and they were impressed. So.
Sweet.
Can't wait.
Yeah, that's going to be
very
cool.
Get on the road.
Yeah, you got to let me know when. That's very exciting. Very cool stuff. How's family?
Good. Yeah, real good. Everybody's super busy, and I love being in a household where it's just a circus where everybody's doing something all the time. Because I picture my biggest fear in family is if like everybody's like snoozing on the couch and flipping TV. That like that gives me nightmares thinking that life is wasted doing that kind of stuff, and we are nowhere near that.
Deb Shop. Going well?
Oh, yeah. Got the ribbon cutting coming up this weekend.
Very cool.
Yep.
And do you have a big pair of scissors for that?
I did. I bought a big pair of scissors, and I don't know what I'm going to do with after I cut this.
Well, if you didn't have one, I have one at the church you could have borrowed.
You know, like everybody's got to have an oversized pair of scissors.
Well, it's interesting. Someone said to me, when you do that, and you do like a ribbon cutting, to keep, you can keep a piece of the ribbon and have everybody that was there sign it.
Mm.
And then you kind of frame that and like put it up in the shop somewhere is kind of thing. And they said, keep the scissors and you can mark them. And each business, each venture, each time you expand for different things, you can use the same pair of scissors and mark dates on them.
Well, as much as I do, I'll be sharpening those suckers here before long.
Yeah, that's sweet. I think today is we're into March, which is crazy.
Yes, it is.
And I'm feeling the spring starting to sprung and hopefully winter doesn't return feel like my early spring plants are starting to poke through the ground. And I'm like, ooh, I'm like, Mother Nature's going to be like, watch this.
Yep.
You think spring's coming and all the buds are starting to come out on the trees and all that. And then winter will roll back again. But I think for me that this time of year, I start to feel that energy and that hope and that resurgence that comes. You know, sometimes in winter, you hit those lulls and you have those days where you put on the fat pants and you just kind of, you know, veg out. But like you're saying, things are picking up,
right?
Picking up for me, picking up for the church. Literally, Tuesday staff meeting, they were like, oh, and I was running down the calendar and I'm hitting this. And they're like, oh yeah. And there's this event and this event. I'm like, wow, I didn't even know we booked those. Like, awesome. And then people are signed up for them and ready to go. And I love that we're getting into a cycle where the team can run and some of the things that we're running with are culturally, you know, important and they're in sync with the vision, but I'm not in the loop, which is amazing. Even with some of the guests we have coming in, you know, I was kind of a little bit in a panic. I'm like, oh, I hadn't heard back and I don't know about this. And lo and behold, you know, three or four team members are all involved and they got this taken care of and they got the PowerPoint taken care of and they got the video taken care of. And I was like, oh, I didn't even know that was happening. And it's a cool thing when the well-oiled machine starts to pump,
right?
The way that you know, you've set it up to do. So that's all been exciting, but it has this feel right now of like new life, hope, excitement, etc. Much like you're saying, that kind of busy kind of feel to it, which is good.
Yeah, for sure. So when you get in this deal where things start happening and they, you know, you're a little bit of a control freak, I have to give it to you this. And when things start happening that you didn't know about, does it give you unease that it happened and you didn't get put your thumbprint on it?
You know, I think as the church has grown, I think the way I kind of look at it and the way I talk about it with our leaders is kind of like two banks to the river, right? So there's the brand, which is super important to guard. The brand, the vision, the direction, the mission. All in a while, someone will start going over here and you got to tap them back to the middle. And I feel like when I first started, you had boats everywhere. People weren't even in the same stream, let alone. And to get everybody in there and say, hey, we're going to ditch that boat. We're going to build a new boat. And this is where we're going to go. And you get everybody in that path. And then you really have to clearly define the one bank of the river. And the more you define that, the more the money comes and the money defines the other side. And I feel like we're in a spot where so many things that I have just a clear definition, like we just know that this is what Bridge of Hope does. And there's so many of those unspoken culture items that I look at and go, wow, like I didn't even know that was something we did, but we did that really well. Or, you know, somebody will step up. And this is one that always creeps me out. I don't know if you've had this, but not creep me out in a bad way, but I'm like, oh, they're listening. They're paying attention. When a leader uses a phrase that I'll use in a meeting that I'm in, I'm like, oh, I'm like, they're listening and paying attention. And they're not like, oh, Pastor Doug always says, they're using it as their own phrase. And that's when you have that shift in language, it's one of the big indicators that culture is going in the right direction.
All right. So Mr. Politician, you didn't answer the question. So when your brain says, this is uneasy because it's something that I didn't even know about. Could it be happening? How do you quell that, Mr. Politician?
We don't say anything in the moment. You don't react.
I love you because, you know exactly what I was saying.
Yeah, in the moment when it came out in staff meeting, the 13 thoughts in my head was like, why didn't I know about that? And who didn't tell me? And all of that. And then I was like, wait a second. People are signed up for it. It's a good thing. It's been marketed the way we've marketed other stuff. We've handled this and handled that, and they're in charge, and I don't have to show up. Why am I complaining? In that sense.
Sure.
Now it's different when it runs aground. That's when you have to insert yourself. But you know, you work so hard to form the banks of the river. You know, and some people worry on the one side with the finances, like, hey, how are we going to get that? But if you really just focus in on mission, vision, brand, all of that, and guard that, the other bank of the river takes care of itself. And then you put people in the middle, and some people drive speedboats and some people are in paddle boats. Like, and I'm okay with speed at some level. Like, all right, you know, as long as we're headed in the right direction, you want to paddle boat this thing, that's fine. It's going to take you a while to get there. But if you want, I can hand you a motor and we can go a little faster. So, but yeah, for me, personally, when I hear that sort of stuff, my knee jerk is like, is it on mission? Is it on brand? Are we deviating? Like, those are the things that I'm thinking about. And when I haven't been involved, those things, sometimes didn't happen quite the way I wanted to. And so I evaluate them on the back end, but we're just in a sweet spot. So,
yeah. And so like the reason I pushed on that, because I was working with an entertainer one time. Mm-hmm. And she had said that the way that she kind of gets herself going is that she goes through her speech prep, right? She does. And that meant something to me. Okay. But I mean, like, what's that mean in verbs? Like, what do you physically do? And when she said, I go in the corner, I break away from all the stuff, I stare into the corner and I run myself on stage and I look at the ground and I go through my mannerisms and I go through my speech and I'm pretending like I'm on stage, that like hit it with me. Cause I was like, ooh, I can go do that. Like what it means to do stage prep meant nothing, but it did, you know what I mean? Yeah. But like the actual verbs that you go through to take something that's difficult. Cause I'm telling you, like I fight fear, uncertainty, and doubt with people. That is the, you know, that uncertainty one is what is the killers, because your brain and your imagination starts going crazy.
Fill in those gaps easy.
So you will always have uncertainty. Like there's no way you have enough information to be certain. Yep. So you're constantly trying to quell, letting your brain go to places that you don't have enough information. So you go to information that's terrible that you don't know.
Yeah. No, the uncertainty side of things takes a strong practice of the visualization muscle. Like you talked about going in the corner and, hey, I'm going to use these mannerisms, going to say these things. I was having this conversation with somebody the other day, totally forget who, but you know, they were talking about being nervous for something. And oh, I was at the barbershop and I was talking to Jose who cuts my hair. And I said to him, you know, he was talking about, he's got a big event coming up Sunday. They got this barber coming in and they're doing a training and he's hosting at his shop and he's excited right here in Camel. And he was talking about it. He's like, I'm so nervous. And I was like, you know, nervous and excited are the same thing. It's the same chemicals in your body. And he's like, really? And I was like, yeah. And I told him a story about Roger Clemens and you know, he would get anxious and he was great AAA baseball pitcher. He's throwing the ball a gajillion miles an hour. Nobody could touch him. They bring him up to the pros and he couldn't find home plate. And they were like, what's wrong? He was in his own head. He was so nervous, so anxious. The uncertainty of how he was going to do out there was killing him. So the club actually hired a psychologist to sit on the bench with him and help teach him how to visualize and program his subconscious so that when he went out there, he could turn that fear, uncertainty, and doubt, that nervousness into energy. And then he became the, you know, Hall of Fame pitcher that we all know. And I was just sharing that with him, like, hey, you know, you can take that and spin it on its head. And it's just a matter of a couple of words. And the first few times that you change them, it doesn't all of a sudden, you know, using those words doesn't flip off a magic switch, but you do that repeatedly and your body will catch up. And, you know, for instance, you know, instead of saying, oh, I'm so nervous about that, or, you know, I don't know how this is going to turn out, you can just flip it and be like, I'm so excited for this weekend. We have somebody great coming in, and you create this healthy anticipation rather than an unhealthy anticipation. And it's just a matter of shifting from the negative to the positive. I don't know how this is going to go to, this is going to be awesome. It's going to be great. And sometimes you're going to go out there and you're going to say all that stuff and you're going to fall flat on your face. Right. But training your brain in that way creates the right type of visualization. If I'm waiting to go preach a sermon or go do a podcast and I'm like, it's probably going to go terrible, you know, I had a bad day, you know, and I'm in my own head. Well, congratulations, you're about to give a crap speech, sermon, whatever. But going into that space, you know, I get to church early and I go into my office for about 10 minutes before I go greet anybody else. I put my stuff down, might get a tea if I, you know, if I feel like my throat needs coated or whatever, but I'm taking that probably first 5 to 10 minutes and I just sit in my desk. I close my eyes. I'm picturing who's going to be here. I'm picturing how worship's going to go. I'm picturing, I can see my notes in my head. I'm picturing the preparation I did. And then, man, this is what's going to happen at the end. And I'm picturing people at the altar or praying for people or whatever that is. And it only takes about 10 minutes, but that centers me in. And then I do my walk around the building and greet people that are there to serve and all that. And then we get into our morning routine of pre-service prayer and everything else up until the service starts. Service does not always go the way that I visualize it beforehand. But by going into that spot, I can channel some of the nervousness. I say to my wife all the time, I was like, I'm nervous every time I get up there. She's like, you'd never know. And I was like, well, I've trained myself to be anticipatory and excited about what God's going to do, not nervous about my performance. It's easy to be nervous about your performance. Everybody's nervous about the performance, but to channel that energy. I said, the greatest athletes in the world know how to do this. They'll throw up before a game in the locker room, and then they'll go out there and smash it because they got to learn to take all that, all the, you know, they talk pregame jitters or whatever, and you got to channel that into the right thing.
Hmm. All right. So what's your warm up to take us through the de-jittering of Doug before he goes on? And so I described the lady who goes in the corner and needs her silence. What do you need?
Yeah. I mean, usually so our service doesn't start till 10:30, and this is my routine just about every week. And so usually by about 8:30, I'm about ready. My wife might need a few minutes to get herself together. So I'll hang with the kids while she's finishing up getting ready. And then I usually leave no later than 9:15. Get to the church, put my stuff down, like I said, get my tea or coffee, depending on how well I slept the night before. And then I just sit at my desk, close my eyes. I walk through that visualization process usually. Sometimes if I'm feeling like I didn't get enough time to prep, because some weeks you have emergencies that come up, I'll sit and I'll read through my notes kind of from start to finish. And then that takes anywhere from, you know, 5 to 15 minutes, depending on how much time. So you're at about 9:20, 9:30, and then I'm going to go and see if Pastor Mike needs anything, how the worship team's doing, stand in the worship center and listen for a minute, see if our sound guy needs to tweak something or whatever, if I'm catching anything. And then I'll go into the lobby, go into the cafe, greet all those people, see how everybody's weeks were and stuff like that. High five a few people. And then I'll circle back usually to the worship center just for 10 minutes before prayer. And then we have prayer at 9:50. And then it's greet mode. And then I'm in people mode. I'm saying hi to everybody that comes through the door as best I can. And then service starts.
All right. So the stuff that happens before, what happens if like a disruptive bomb gets dropped in your head, either from you or somebody suggests something that makes you think a bad thing, or you look at an email and it's like, and you're about to go on.
You eliminate all of those things.
Okay.
Like I've told our team, like, emergencies don't happen on Sunday mornings. I just told them straight up, like, handle it or save it till after service. Like, unless somebody's dead on the floor and we can't have service, like, I need you to handle it. Like, building's burning down, somebody's dead, come to me. But other than that, like, it can wait till 12:02 or whatever time it is that we're done service. A lot of times in the greeting time, people will say, oh, Pastor, I mean to talk to you. And what I'll do, say, you know, I really want to hear about that. Can we connect after service? Or if it's a longer thing, why don't we set up an appointment and you can come in and I'll deflate it a little bit that way. But some people want to corner you.
Like right now.
Yeah.
Need it right now.
And at one church I was at, they had security that trailed the lead pastor because it was a little bit of a bigger church and we had a lot of people we didn't know. And if the lead pastor at any point stuck his hand in his back pocket, security would step up and be like, oh, you know what? They need you over here, da da da, and give him an out, which is cool.
You accidentally put your hand in your back pocket.
Yeah, but it's not a normal standing position. And, you know, so some of that stuff, like I get, you know, you put some of those things in place, but you can't prevent every emergency. But 90% of them I want filtered out. And then as churches get bigger at some point, you know, Bridge of Hope, there'll be an executive pastor. And one of their functions is to be a poop filter, that no poop comes to pastor on Sunday morning. Right. And in general, and having that kind of right hand that filters out all the garbage and handles the, you know, kids ministry areas upset at the cafe area because they spilled coffee in there and didn't clean it up, like stuff like that. Right. Where that finds me at 12:02 now, you know, I've alleviated before service, to have the person that, hey, this is your responsibility. You need to go in there and be like, this person needs to clean that up. Like, I don't need to be involved in, babysitting our staff, like figure it out. And our team's really good about, negotiating that and figuring it out amongst themselves. But yeah, I try and filter as much of that out, because when you do get one of those, that's a big deal. Or even if it's not a big deal, but it gets through your filter to you, it can sidetrack your brain for the morning.
Yeah. And timing too, like, you know, even on our operations, because we touch so many things, there's a period where, you know, I get into logical mode. So I want to calculate. So I don't want to hear anybody's problems. I don't want to hear about anybody's dreams or goals in that time, because you're going to tell me about them and my logical brain is going to not respond to them, you know, very well. So, but there's a lot of people who are dropping those little truth bombs at themselves in the worst times and like sabotaging whatever happens next. Like, hey, I'm about to meet some, what if they hate me? Right. That's not a good one to put in your head right before you meet someone, because then, you know, your subconscious is going to react to what you know, program to it.
Yeah. Your self-talk's important.
For sure.
You know, you can create so much, in the culture and in the stream of things to curb the outside stuff, you know, but there's certain things, there's certain times, like in staff meeting or elsewhere, like where I'm like, you know, bad news, like, ages like milk, not like wine. So like, if you got bad news, like
right now,
and, you know, we had, I forget what it was a Saturday night at like 6 o'clock recently. And, when it got super, super cold, we had all this ice built up on, the one side of our building, and then some water ended up coming down the walls and stuff. And, you know, I get a text message, so sorry to bother you. And I'm like, no, this is something that's going to age like milk. Like, I want to know about this so that we can get the right people there and taking care of it. And we figured it out, but it took us a little bit, and we're still trying to figure out the long-term solution. In the short term, we figured out how to fix it, but long-term, it's going to happen again if we don't adjust. And so, but like, those things are important. And then, you know, then you get like, I hate when people have, you know, I tell people all the time, like, your poor planning doesn't make that my emergency. And people do that all the time. Well, you know, I was trying to do da da da, and I didn't get a chance to do this. So, Pastor, can you? And I'm like, no, and people hate that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, listen, you should have planned better. I don't know how else to say that. You know, you chose to do this, this, and this instead of that. This is not my emergency. I don't have to walk behind this and clean it up. Now there are times where, you know, you extend grace and mercy and you can help with the cleanup process.
Because sometimes shit hits the fan. And it does. It's nobody's fault. Yeah. And, you know, as you much as you backtrack through it, there's nothing you could have done differently.
But it's the difference between the picture and the movie. Like, it's one thing for that to happen one time or twice a year or something. But when it's the same employee or the same volunteer all the time, where you're just like, all right, just drama follows you everywhere. Or you
let's talk about that, because that's I've seen this has been a theme around for a little while now, about there's certain characters that build a lifestyle that no matter what, they can't experience peace, because once they have peace, they create drama that then disturbs anything that they can do. So 100%. They'll do something in 2 day stints, but by the third day, they can't consistently do it anymore.
It's I'm probably going to use the wrong word here, but it's like the idea of homeostasis. Like it's what their environment is used to. So they've been raised, you know, when we had fish growing up, because we were never allowed to have a dog. And it wasn't until I was, I think, 13 or 14 that my grandfather, who lived with us, came home with a dog. My dad wasn't happy about it, but it was his dad, so he just was like, whatever. But, you know, we weren't allowed to have a dog, so my mom got us fish. And so we had like a little like 10-gallon or 20-gallon fish tank. It wasn't huge. And we'd go to the pet store. It was called Zoos right around the corner, and you'd pick out the little, you know, nano, you know, glow-in-the-dark this, and you got your little Pleco fish that would suck on the thing. And you what you were doing is you were building an environment that they were going to live in. And the thing I learned as I got a little older, the type of fish that you put in there matter, because some fish don't get along with each other. Some fish you need to clean up after other fish. And some fish can only exist in certain environments, certain pH levels, certain things like that. And so in a small tank like that, you know, you're not getting crazy wild fish. We weren't doing anything with salt water or coral or anything like that. My uncles had some huge fish tanks with that sort of stuff. And that takes, like, you have to be on that environment, because you're dealing with really, really like nice, high-end, expensive fish that you want to keep alive. Our fish were like, you know, $1.99. If they floated to the top, we went back and we got another one.
Right.
But I say all that to illustrate the point. You know, those fish got used to the environment that was in there. There were times where the pH of the tank or the amount of algae or any of that stuff.
Algae. Oh, you're making fun of me yesterday for naivete, and then you can't even say algae.
Algae. It came out algae. I'm not sure why. As soon as I said it, I'm like, maybe nobody will notice. And Joe,
you can't mispronunciate something.
Back that bus up over me. Yes, algae.
Algae? That's a hard G in that word.
But the tank got to a certain place, and our fish had lived in it for so long. That it had a certain ecosystem that everything was used to. And we went and bought a new fish or two to introduce to the tank, and they died because the environment they were in and the environment they came to were different.
Right.
And so I find this to be true with people. You can take a healthy person, stick them in a crappy environment. And the Bible says that good, bad company corrupts good character. So like, I can take one of the best kids, and if I stick him at a lunch table or in a different school, and you surround him with kids that are in trouble all the time, I guarantee you, give it enough time, and that bad character will, bad company will corrupt good character. And with the ecosystems that we create in office spaces, a lot of times you can tell a toxic person almost immediately. Like you don't swim well in this environment. You're used to an environment where there's more sarcasm or there's more whatever. Like, we don't do that here. And so it jumps out in the culture.
You make it odd. Like, it doesn't fit.
And it's not even on purpose. Like, this is just our ecosystem, and they're coming from another ecosystem. Now, there are, you know, to run with this illustration a little bit, there are certain fish that you can put in a bad ecosystem that will help clean it up, that will clean up the algae, and that help clean up even after the other fish as they poop or the extra food that falls down. Some of those bottom feeders you need, and they'll clean up what's there. And so sometimes you can import good fish into your dirty tank, and they'll help change the ecosystem. You can hire a good employee, you can hire somebody, and they'll come in and shift some things in the culture. So, you know, I don't want to overuse that analogy, but I think that's the point, is some people have just been raised in an ecosystem where being late is okay, or being, you know, sarcastic is all right, or being unprofessional. And then they come into an environment like this and everybody's like, what are you doing?
Right. Well, this morning, Ali posted a picture about a, you know, a skinny dude that over 20 years got fat. And the whole thing was that, you know, it took you 20 years in investment to get that environment. Yeah. And most people will listen to the show, you know, they hear what we're saying, and I'd really like to unweave the problem that they are. I, myself included, like, I don't give myself enough patience that when I see a problem, that I give just as many years to roll that back that I took to get myself in that position in the first place.
Yeah, I've heard two expressions with that. Like, Rome wasn't built in a day is one that they use all the time. Like, it takes time to build something that you really want. But the other thing is, like, when you have the Titanic, right, you're driving the Titanic, it's a big ship. Took a lot of technology, took a lot of people to build it. And you try and turn that thing on a dime, right, it breaks in half. Right. And so, you know, in regards to making big changes, like, a lot of times you're fighting 30 years of habits, 40 years of habits, things that were subconsciously put in or nurtured into you. And you're just like, you know what, today.
Right.
Forever changing my life.
Well, I'll tell you, like, the first 10 years of the computer company, I put zero effort into culture development. It was all about production. Mm. It was all about whatever.
Yeah.
And there, to this day, some of that shitty culture floats to the surface, and I got to eyeball it and treat it like I'm the same guy, because I started in the first place. I screwed it up in the first place, but today I'm not the same guy, but I'm still tackling it. And that's like 15 years later.
Yeah. Maxwell says that culture eats vision for breakfast.
For sure.
And so you Absolutely. Can have the best plans, best dreams, all that sort of stuff, but if you don't have the right ecosystem to raise it up, it'll die.
Yeah. And, you know, you can do, I like attrition. I like slowly maneuvering and steering that ship a little bit. When you take that speedboat and you abruptly make a 90 degrees to go in a different direction, you might be able to, like, change it in one bit, but think about it. Like, if you had a terrible exercise and terrible eating habits, and all of a sudden I'm going to do nothing but work out and eat nothing but lettuce. Like, how are you really going to feel? You're going to get broken. You're not going to get healthy. You're going to feel that.
You're going to be miserable.
Yes. And it's not going to give you your intended results.
Yeah. If you stick with it, it will. But it's,
if you survive,
it's consistency over time. Yeah. The whole thing. And so even in business, you know, church growth, right? So, when I was in Bible school, you know, they talked about the metrics and, you know, what are you trying to do and how are you trying to measure and how do you gain guests and new converts and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, realistically, everybody looks at the like dozen, you know, massive mega churches out there that are, you know, tens of thousands of people. And I'm sure there's more than that, but they look at a handful and they go, oh, you know, they started their church and they stuck up a cross and they invited everybody and 10,000 people showed up. And it's like, well, when you get into the story a little bit, you know, they grew by, you know, 7 or 12%. They may have had a good year where they grew by 20%, but it's typically between that 7 to 10% mark. And they were just consistent and faithful over 25 years.
Right.
And, you know, I don't know, 7 to 10% is a pretty good return on your money. When you start looking at that in terms of, you start with 100 people, and you get a 7 to 10% return, and you're adding that to your numbers year over year, that's not a bad deal.
Speaking of which, how's your crypto doing?
It's bounced back a little bit. Okay. It was in the toilet for a while.
It was a scary time during the Super Bowl, and then a little bit after. Yeah.
Yeah. Joe Biden took a big dump. Russia decided to invade Ukraine, and
do you know what happened there, by the way? So we put sanctions on Russia, and they turned around because then they couldn't spend money, and they converted a lot of their stuff to Bitcoin, and then they pushed the prices up. Now they're going to find that that's not as easy to be able to buy things in crypto, whatever. Sure. So it's going to be really short lived before they do it. But there's even, you know, it used to be when Bitcoin came out, if something disastrous happened in the world, Bitcoin would go through the roof because that was really the only place you could put it. You didn't trust them. So the more volatility in the world, the higher the Bitcoin price. So it's good for Bitcoin investors to have, you know, the world turn to shit, but, you know,
not good for everybody else.
No, not at all.
No. Yeah. And, you know, the stock market has done what the stock market has done and all of that, but, you know, just holding and watching the trends, you know, if they hold true from previous years, if those metrics hold true, it'll turn here. And I know world events, you know, affect certain things, But it's yeah, it's starting to. At first, I was like, oh, put it in. I had to explain to my wife, I just lost half of our investment, like 2 months. And now it's turned quite a bit. And I think in another couple weeks here, we'll be about even at what we put in. So,
okay. So yeah. you had what, Ethereum? Is that what you did?
I have several. I bought some Bitcoin because you have to. Mm-hmm. It's just like part of the game. My big one is Ethereum. I like that one a lot. I did a lot of research on that. I felt like it's being used in ways that I understand. I didn't want to invest in something I didn't understand, if that makes sense. And then a small coin that I, in my research for Ethereum, that I learned a lot about was Polygon or Matic. And it basically is a faster version of Ethereum, but it's a newer coin. Everybody's kind of in that world's kind of raving about it because the speed of Ethereum and something else, it just kind of basically is an upgrade on Ethereum, and they feel like it's more versatile and can be used in that. So I bought some of that, and it was cheap to buy like 300 coins of it because okay. It's not, you know, cool. Not much.
So you've
like,
got some exposure. You got
It's I'm spread too. So you know where and then on Coinbase, I don't know if you've done this, but you can get like $20 or $25 for free. They do these little like learn about crypto things. So I learned about a couple of these like smaller coins, and then they gave you some coins for watching their videos, and then you can convert them into whatever you want. So, nice. So I was like, I'll take the free $20 to watch your videos. That's fine. So yeah,
there you go.
Yeah.
This is for future topics on a show sometime, you know, probably in the short term. I read, okay, so this cool thing. It's really cool to be able to bookend some of these topics, especially ones that are a little bit, you know, confrontational. Mm-hmm. And have an expert on both sides of it and listen to them like back to back. Yeah. And we talk a lot about nutrition here. So the first one that I read was basically a book about veganism and proteins through mm-hmm. getting stuff through vegetation and fruits and vegetables and anti-meat and whatever. And I listened to it and didn't object, just kind of took it all in.
And then you got Jordan Peterson that only eats steak.
And then I wanted sort of like a dietitian or a nutritionist or someone who had the science backing mm-hmm. on it. So then I switched over and there was a book. I think it was called Sacred Cow. And it was the opposite of that, where they're like, hey, you can't get the same protein and whatever. Mm-hmm. And like, I sat there really confused because I believed both of them. And I thought that they had really good points on the both of them.
Maybe they're both right.
They both couldn't be true.
No.
They still can't be true.
Okay.
Because they said conflicting things, but in a way that they were both 100% believable. So if you took 2,000 people and said, what's your name? And 2,000 people over here, you're right. They gave you this thing, but it was these different people. There's got to be something to it. Why these guys got 2,000 people to have this result and a different 2,000 people got this result. Like, but comparing and contrasting.
But you don't think that you think they're mutually exclusive?
I don't know, because the reason that it's sort of like a conflict is because, okay, so red meat causes inflammation. It causes, you know, you shouldn't do too much of it because whatever. And the meat people are saying, well, the nutrition and the protein has this density so that you don't have to eat quite as much. And overeating meat is bad. But if you have 2 ounces, and then people are like, well, who eats 2 ounces of a steak? Well, you only need 2 ounces if you go down that direction. Sure. You don't overeat. So I'm like, okay, well, all of this sort of has merit, but I'd really like to have someone in front of me that I can eyeball and like mm-hmm. ask those questions for. So I think in the future, see if we can get some people who will battle with us a little bit and give us good information. Yeah. I'm sure there's a ton of experts in this area.
Yeah, I would think so. So Joe's reading books.
Audiobooks. It's not real reading. It's like listening.
I just don't. I was sitting there thinking, man, he's reading books. I got to get him a book or two now. No, audiobook. Gotcha.
Yeah. Are you reading or listening to anything interesting?
I have 3 going right now. Actually, one I think you'd really like. I haven't cracked it yet, but it was recommended to me, and it's called A Brief History of Tomorrow. And it's essentially talking about AI, the future, all of that sort of stuff. I haven't dug into the books. I'm not doing it any justice. It's thick, but it's getting into, you know, kind of the direction the world's going type deal. And the title kind of intrigued me. But I actually just am coming to the close of a book on Sabbath and on rest that was really, really good. And then the other book I just finished was a book called Spiritual Authority. I just finished it and I went back and took some notes in it and stuff like that. It was pretty good.
Any podcasts? Any interesting? Because I'm totally dug out of the political scene. I don't want to listen to it anymore. I don't want to be involved in it. I want to, you know, my brain's scorched at this point.
Yeah. I love The School of Greatness by Lewis House. I don't know if you've ever listened to that. He has all kinds of like really cool guests on and stuff like that. And he dives into stuff like you're talking about with nutrition and stuff like that. But he also does stuff with prayer and meditation and does stuff with he did a whole Law of Attraction episode and stuff like that. His episodes are a little long, like they're about like an hour, hour and a half. I was listening to him a bunch in the summertime because I put him in and cut the grass is what I would do. It's about an episode or two every week, but I like his a lot for along those lines where it's not political. I love Ben Shapiro. I listen to him every day.
I would consider that political, though.
It is. Oh, 100%, but still fantastic. And they're starting a sports show over at Daily Wire and a couple of those that I'm looking forward to checking out. I haven't found anybody else in the Daily Wire family that I'm like, they're awesome. Most of them, like, eh. Like when Ben takes time off and they have people sub for him, I don't listen.
Okay.
It's just not as good.
Candace is cool, though.
Candace is cool.
She's just cool.
It's cool. I guess it's more the personality type. I just buy into Ben. Like Matt Walsh is nice, and you know, some of the other guys are good. They're not bad, but it's just not the same.
We haven't talked about Law of Attraction in a while. How are you doing on it? Like let's kind of set up the next possibilities for shows. So we want to unearth a very sophisticated, you know, very confident truths pitting against one another, and then Law of Attraction. And
yeah, we definitely should touch back on that. Sure. I've actually followed some interesting Law of Attraction people and stuff on Instagram, and I've been enjoying some of their content, and even one or two on Facebook. That they share some stuff that there's some stuff that they'll share and I'm like, eh, and then
go kind of mystic.
It's a little hokey. Yeah. But man, every once in a while they'll hit a home run where I'm like, oh, that's solid. Like that's
so why really do you good. Think they do that? Why do you think people are so eager to delve on the mystery and explain side of it?
Well, because so many people that are tied into the Law of Attraction, this is the Christian aversion to it, are kind of new agey. They have no spiritual foundation in they're kind of everything's kind of pluralist, and they're kind of out there in the crystals, and you can get into some weird right. stuff in the Law of Attraction camp. But that's why there's kind of this Christian aversion to it. Like, oh, if you do Law of Attraction, you're like into like crystals and seances and like talking to the dead right. and like stuff like that. In the core principles of Law of Attraction, I think really parallel a lot of what Jesus taught and stuff like that. And there's certain parallels in there that I'm like, oh, that's really good. So for me, I have to chew the meat and spit out the bones, but I do that with everything.
Yeah, because there's some value in it, as long as like the temptation is that you make it agnostic and you're in the right. pursuit of truth, right? You're looking sure. to explain things that you can't. And most of the stuff is going to be beyond you no matter what. There's yeah. going to be some theology that has to go along with the explanation.
Right.
But once you figure out how it reacts with you and what you control with you and what you can do with you.
Yeah.
Well, one of the I use this three same examples, and we use them all the time here about like, you know, doing the preparation for something before it's occurred, like the development sure. of faith into something
yeah. where
I want to get married. Like, okay, so what are you doing that includes the 100%. Potential? Well, people will say like, I'm going out to bars or I'm going out to whatever, but then you look at their life and what?
Nothing. I always giggle at that example when people, you talk about people wanting to get married or whatever, and that you say, oh, you're going out to bars, go whatever. And just remember, you're going to catch where you fish.
Yeah.
Right. You know, why are you catching Swamp Thing? Because you're fishing in the swamp. Like, right. why? And so it does not, you get what you attract.
Yeah.
To use the Law of Attraction.
And so, like, when I give the examples of like what preparations in your own household right. are you doing to make room for another person living there? And
yeah.
they always respond the same thing. Well, once I have that person, right. then I'll start making room.
People do the them. Same thing with giving at church all the time. Like, you talk about, you know, giving from the pulpit, and they say, well, you know, when I get a job and I make a little more money, then I'll give. And I'm like, generosity doesn't work that way. Yep.
Wrong way.
If I have $5, I can be generous. I don't need 5,000 to be generous. And I think that switch, which by the way, we just finished doing our taxes, and I'm always blown away every year because I don't necessarily think throughout the year, like how much money did I give this year? But then you sit down and do your taxes and you're doing your charitable donations, various stuff. And every year I look at Sam and I'm like, we gave more money than we did last year. I can't believe that we gave more. And you look at that and it's like, wow, how did we do that? It was very cool to look at that and see that increase, because you're just being, I'm being faithful in the day to day. It's not like I'm sitting and be like, this year I want to give this percentage of my income. You know, I do some things routinely and faithfully, but then, you know, this year I was like, oh, we got a thing. I was like, oh yeah, we did give to that, didn't we? Like a couple of those things that I totally forgotten about that in the moment. But you know, people do that all the time. Oh, the grass is greener over there. When I get over there, when I get my own company, then I'll do this. I'm like, you don't, like that stuff doesn't change you. It just exposes you. When there's greater pressure, it just shows who you are. And so do the small things well now. And when you get more,
it'll go up. And honestly, there's some years that like, I can't find something that inspires me enough to be charitable. So there's some years that suck it out of me. Cause if I'm inspired, I give with all of my heart. And if I'm not, I don't really force it. I just wait to be inspired again. And I would tell you, like, last year was probably the most uninspiring year that we've ever had to date. And you know, today I'm going around trying to look for some really good groups to take some of this stuff. And I'm reading their mission statements, and they're not doing anything for me. It's like the language of inspiring people to do generous things is gone, right? It's either forced you to give or nothing, and nothing in between. So
interesting.
It's a weird dynamic.
But I think we could have some fun shows coming up. I'd love to jump back into some Law of Attraction stuff. I know we get a couple people that love to jump on that bandwagon and listen with us.
I need some cynics. I need some people to try to poke holes in it, because everybody around me right now just listens to me, and I need people to argue with me.
All the cynics that I know are cynics for the wrong reasons.
Okay.
They're cynics for religious reasons, you know, or whatever.
And I respect that. I really
totally
do.
Respect that. Yeah. But you get them in that spot, and it's just like, none of the data matters. None of the principles matter. Right. It's, well, on this precept, it's wrong because of the formation.
But I guarantee you, if I didn't call it Law of Attraction, if I was like, I'm just going to tell you about auto-suggestion and how to program your subconscious, they'd be all about it.
Right. Correct.
So, all right.
It's going to be good. We're going to do a couple good shows coming up.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.